There we go. Okay. So, as you all know, pertussis, a whooping cough, is a vaccine-preventable disease causing acute respiratory infections. The outbreaks do occur regularly, even in highly vaccinated populations. And the classic illness of paroxysmal cough, inspiratory whoop, and post-tussive vomiting is often seen, but less often in vaccinated and older people. In lab diagnostics, culture of a nasopharyngeal specimen, or an NP swab, is the gold standard and is specific, but it's slow and sensitivity is variable. PCR, on the other hand, detects the organism's DNA and is sensitive and rapid, but methods are not standardized, and laboratories often use a single target, the IS-481. But in practice, this can be overly sensitive and lead to false positives. So in response, CDC has developed a new multi-target assay designed to improve clinical accuracy. Also, we have serology, measures the antibody to the pertussis toxin. So, in terms of the outbreak that I'm discussing today, it took place in a highly vaccinated rural community of around 90,000 people. There was concern that there'd been a prolonged outbreak and atypical clinical features had been seen, and despite appropriate control measures, the outbreak continued. Notably, all PCR testing had been performed at a single commercial laboratory, and no cultures had been performed. Also, initial attempts to confirm the outbreak were inconclusive. So, the investigation objectives were firstly to characterize the suspected outbreak, determine whether the Bordetella pertussis bacteria was a causative agent, and obviously recommend any outbreak prevention and control measures. And just quickly, a review of the CST pertussis case definition, how it was applied in this investigation. A clinical or probable case was one who had a cough duration of 14 days or more and one of the classic symptoms of paroxysm, whoop, or post-tussive vomiting. A confirmed case could be anyone with who's culture positive, or a clinical case with either PCR positivity or an epi-link to a confirmed case. The outbreak case definition was also used, which allowed any case of a cough illness of 14 days or more to be included, and this was modified to include anyone with a PCR positive result. In terms of the actual investigation approach, we did case ascertainment, so we looked at routine surveillance data, and we also supplemented that with a questionnaire where we asked about demographics, pertussis and other upper respiratory infection symptoms, vaccination status, exposure and treatment. We applied this questionnaire to existing pertussis cases and also to any new cough illness cases who presented in the community. We also obtained clinic data on the amount of pertussis PCR testing and the proportion of tests positive. So here we see the epidemic curve of pertussis cases that were reported. And this was by week of report, and these were the cases that met the investigation case definition. So you can see from November the 28th to September the 4th, 2009, there were 125 cases, of which 92, or 74%, were actually PCR positive, and they're shown in pink. You can see two clusters, the winter cluster of 46 cases, and in summer of 79 cases, a larger cluster. So one hypothesis was that perhaps there were two different outbreaks going on, perhaps caused by different agents. I'm very bad at going in the right direction here, obviously. So to investigate that hypothesis, we compared winter and summer cases. As you can see in this table, the winter cluster fitted more with the classic pertussis picture than the summer cases. A greater proportion of winter cases were classified as confirmed, had a cough duration of 14 days or more, had one or more classic pertussis symptoms. In addition, a larger percentage of summer cases rather than winter cases attended one particular clinic, Clinic A, and had already completed the age-appropriate vaccinations, although the latter was not statistically significant. In this chart, we see that there was a statistically significant decrease in the proportion of cases between winter and summer reporting the classic symptoms of pertussis, such as paroxysms, post-tussive vomiting, and whoop. And as I mentioned earlier, we looked at the clinic positivity rates. Here, the majority of PCR positive results came from Clinic A, which prompted further investigation. These are in the green bars. Here we see the number of positive PCR tests at Clinic A are green, and in yellow are the other clinics. The pink line shows the total number of PCR tests performed each month at all the clinics. And as you can see, that although total PCR testing declined between December to July and August, as cough illness presentations declined during the summer, there was a paradoxical increase in the number of positive results, particularly at Clinic A, suggesting a possible diagnostic issue there. So moving on to the lab methods, individuals with a new cough illness were offered diagnostic testing performed at CDC. So we obtained serum for pertussis toxin antibody testing and an MP specimen for Bordetella PCR and culture, and also for other common respiratory pathogens we're going to test by PCR alone. Serological confirmatory testing was done on pertussis patients for whose cough onset was less than 8 weeks prior. And this is the optimal period for seropositivity. And a subset of LabX's PCR positive specimens were also retested for Bordetella species and other respiratory pathogens by PCR. And since PCR is kind of critical to this whole investigation, we're just going to have a quick review of that. So cycle threshold, or CT, is the number of cycles needed for amplified DNA in a specimen to be detected above a predefined threshold. And in short, large amounts of DNA produce low CT values, and small amounts of DNA equate to high CT values, which can indicate infection, but also may be suspicious of contamination. We also reviewed the clinic NP specimen collection and transport procedures, since these are also central to lab diagnostics. So whereas clinics in this outbreak setting use MP swabs inserted into a liquid transport medium, CDC prefers to use MP aspirates, in which a swab is dipped in before insertion into a semi-solid transport medium. Here's a select from the transport medium. On CDC testing, all the sera and culture were negative. PCR testing was performed on 39 specimens, including 14 that were previously PCR positive at Lab X. There were 9 indeterminate PCR results, and these included 7 Lab X retests and 2 new patients whose specimens were taken by Clinic A staff using liquid transport media rather than by CDC using semi-solid media. The remaining 30 PCRs were negative, and a whole host of other respiratory pathogens were also detected by PCR. So at that point, when we reviewed the available epidemiologic, clinical, and laboratory data, we found that it didn't suggest that the summer outbreak was due to pertussis. So we're thinking, what could be causing those summer PCR positives? And could false positives be playing a role? Since PCR methodology is vulnerable to false positives, we reviewed LabX's Bordetella PCR positivity rate and the CT values over time. And new MP aspirate specimens were also split for duplicate PCR testing at CDC and LabX. The monthly proportion of PCR positive tests at LabX rose steeply between May and June of the outbreak year compared to that of the previous year. You can see the rise here in yellow. LabX, which serves many areas, indicated that these positive tests originated from the outbreak area. And illustrated here are the CT values on the PCR positive results from LabX throughout the outbreak time period. As you can see, they form 2 distinct clusters, a winter cluster with low CTs and a summer cluster with higher CTs. If we actually overlay CDC's cutoffs for determining positivity, almost all the winter cases fall into the positive range, while the summer cases fall into the indeterminate or the actual negative range. During those whole time periods, LabX did not report a protocol change in its PCR assays that would account for such a dramatic shift in the CT values. And as mentioned earlier, high CT values can be suggest infection, but often can be suspicious of contamination. In order to rule out contamination occurring in the actual lab, we split NP specimens for testing at CDC and at LabX, and there were no discordant results. Interestingly, the single CDC indeterminate result reported as positive by LabX was collected by clinic staff using the liquid transport media rather than CDC using semi-solid media. So at this stage, the available evidence suggested that false positives had occurred. And although we had concerns about LabX's reporting of indeterminate PCR results as positive, cross-contamination was unlikely occurring in the lab. Since most testing was performed at Clinic A, clinic-level contamination was assessed by environmental sampling for Bordetella pertussis DNA and a survey of swabbing and vaccination practices. So here we have the environmental sampling results. We found substantial contamination of Clinic A surfaces, with 52% of sites having DNA present in considerable amounts, particularly nurses' laptops. Only 10% of locations sampled in another clinic, B, were contaminated with very low levels of DNA, as indicated by the high CT values. On the clinic survey, there were notable differences in routine practices between clinics. So Clinic A did not wear gloves for NP swab taking. Some of their exam rooms did not have hand washing facilities. They did not institute a regular daily bleach clean. And they were known to use a pertussis vaccine that had been previously demonstrated to contain Bordetella pertussis DNA. And the Clinic A had actually switched to this vaccine in the fall of 2008. So we can now hypothesize the mechanisms that perhaps led to multiple false positives. Bordetella pertussis DNA from vaccines or sick children may contaminate laptops and other surfaces in the clinic. Environmental DNA on surfaces may be transferred to ungloved hands, which then handle and contaminate the NP swab stick. The swab is actually inserted into a liquid transport media. And any contaminant DNA on the swab stick may be washed off into the liquid, and it's the liquid which is actually extracted later for PCR testing. And finally, reporting of high CT values from contaminant DNA as positives by any lab may culminate in false positives. So while there may have been a true pertussis outbreak in the winter, the summer cases were likely a pseudo-outbreak, triggered by real disease in the winter and driven by increased testing and false positive results. The role of DNA present in the clinic environment as a culprit in specimen contamination leading to false positives is not widely reported yet, but one to watch out for. And false positive results by PCR may be prevented by improved clinic practices, such as appropriate and targeted testing, hand hygiene, wearing gloves for those procedures, and specimen collection and transport, such as using an NP aspirate kit, which is a closed system, rather than semi-solid transport media. This outbreak was a cautionary tale of not taking lab results at face value, but being mindful that they're dependent on every step in the way, in the process, from specimen collection and handling to transport and processing. An integrated lab and epidemiologic approach was the key to unraveling the dynamics of this outbreak. It included review of existing lab data, the appropriate application of confirmatory tests, considering environmental sampling, which is not routine in pertussis outbreak investigations, but on occasion, as in this example, may be appropriate. And also the interpretation of lab data in the clinical and epidemiological context. There is evidence elsewhere that contamination of specimens in clinics may be occurring, and environmentally present Bordetella pertussis DNA has been observed in several different locations. So it's important to work with labs to achieve standardized PCR methods with clinically relevant positive cutoff values and the adoption of an equivocal or indeterminate results category. And as public health professionals, we should understand the pitfalls and the potentials of PCR diagnostics. Fortunately, guidance has been recently released, on pertussis diagnosis, such as the HAN on best practices on the use of PCR, which we have available here today. Been an expert video commentary, expert as in myself, a webinar, and FAQs on lab methods, and some of those brochures are there as well. And all of these have been developed in order to help healthcare professionals optimize the use of PCR in diagnosing pertussis, so we can avoid the common pitfalls and improve clinical accuracy in diagnosis. Thank you very much.